we should get started for the Safety Committee meeting. Let me begin by turning the floor over to our Chief Safety Officer, Mr. Lavin, for our safety message this morning.
Good morning. In the case of an emergency, we're going to egress through the main doors to the closest exit, illuminated by an exit sign. We're going to assemble on the lawn of the National Building Museum. An AED is available behind the guard station. Fire extinguishers are strategically located throughout the building. The nearest ones are behind me to the left. Restrooms are past the guard desk on the left as well. Today's safety contact is National Heart Month. The American Heart Association recognizes February as National Heart Month. Heart disease is the leading cause for death for men and women in the United States. Every year, 1 in 4 deaths are caused by heart disease. Heart disease can often be prevented when people make healthy choices and lifestyle changes to lower the risk of developing heart disease, such as replacing consumption of high-calorie fatty foods with more fruits and vegetables, whole grains, and nuts. Controlling risk factors is also important, such as watching your weight, quitting smoking, and staying away from secondhand smoke, controlling your cholesterol and blood pressure. If you drink alcohol, drink only in moderation. Get active and eat healthy. Besides controlling your risk for heart disease, there is something everyone can do that can potentially save a life. That is obtaining a CPR AED certification. Many community organizations offer CPR and basic first aid training because every minute counts when someone is having a medical emergency. I would like to close this morning's safety contact by taking a moment to recognize Metro Transit Officer Dill and the Good Samaritan, who recently provided assistance to a Metro customer suffering a heart attack at the Braddock Road station and saved that person's life. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lavin. May I have a motion to approve the agenda this morning? And a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. And now I'd like to approve the minutes of January 26th. May I have a motion for that, please?
So moved.
And a second?
Sorry.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Well, good morning. We have one item on the agenda today. It's the 2016 Safety Report. This report provides a high-level overview of Metro's progress in developing and maintaining a safety culture. It reports on employee and customer injury rates, as well as with other actions Metro is taking to improve safety. I'll turn this over to Mr. Lavin to begin the presentation.
Okay, so this report is going to cover several areas. Two of the two key performance indicators, which are employee injury rates per 200,000 hours worked and customer injury rates per 1 million passenger trips. We're also going to discuss some of the strategies that we use to surface, identify, and resolve problems, such as FTA, NTSB, corrective actions plans, external and internal safety audits, and key safety initiatives. The employee injury rate is 1% above where it ended last year with a relatively static trend line. However, it is noteworthy to mention that the employee injury rate is 19% below the Bureau of Labor Statistics average for the transit industry, so we're actually performing better than the industry average. Okay, we can go next slide. So when we look at employee injuries, we try to identify the areas that we need to work on. So the one of the problematic areas, a lack of situation awareness of our employees, contributed slip, falls, struck by, against injuries. The actions that we're doing to reduce this is job hazard analysis. So specifically, which I'll discuss a little further in the presentation, we went out to some of the depots and we actually looked at the way that they were performing the maintenance. I'll get into that in a minute. In addition to that, we're discussing real-time safety briefings of hazards that are identified. And we're also doing outreach through safety bulletins, such as the use of the mat that came to light after the injury that occurred back in January when the employee received a shock working near the third rail. In addition to that, in the area of non-preventable collisions, we're focusing on defensive driving tactics, not only during bus operator training, but for our employees who operate Metro vehicles as well. And in addition to that, we're installing deceleration lights. Because when we talk about non-preventable collisions, the questions always come up, how do you prevent a non-preventable collision? So what we're finding is in a lot of these events, our buses are actually being rear-ended by other vehicles. So we set up a pilot where we installed deceleration lights on the rear of buses. And initially, it was done on 10 buses. We had a positive result of that. So we're now expanding it through the fleet. We plan on equipping approximately 400 buses a year, and that should take us 4 years to complete. In addition to that, we're also installing strobe lights on buses as well. And we had some, there was an issue in Virginia from a legislative standpoint that prohibited us from installing strobe lights. That was resolved. We're going to roll that out fleet-wide as well to increase the conspicuity of the bus to pedestrians. That's also a four-year project that's going to take, it's a project that's going to take 4 years to complete. With regard to stress-related injuries, those are generally affecting our bus operators. What we did in that is three key actions. We started installing the bus shield, which creates a barrier between the public and the operator. We also had the bus MTPD partnership, where the MTPD goes out to high traffic or high crime routes, and they have a greater presence there. They also have the BOC touch base with the operators at the end of each line to ensure they're okay. One of the other things we had is a lot of times when the bus operator makes a fare announcement, like pay your fare, that can escalate into a verbal confrontation. We now have those being automated so that the bus operator doesn't have to personally engage with the customer for fare evasion issues. Go to the next slide. So in the category, so these are, this next slide represents positive actions that we've taken that have resulted in a reduction of injuries to employees. So in the cord-in category, we had a 61% decrease. And the nature of these injuries, which were done as a result of targeted hazard assessments, primarily on the bus mechanic side, where we went out, we looked at the processes they were using, and we gave them strategies to combat it. We also did a train-the-trainer for the supervisors so that they know how to do hazard assessments going forward to help reduce injuries. In addition, on the MTPD side, we had a reduction of 21% in pursuit arrest-related injuries. This is we've now given training to the MTPD on how to subdue, you know, or reduce confrontations with assailants so that the assailant doesn't sustain an injury, nor does the police officer. In addition to ICE-related slip, trips, and fall, we had a 56% decrease in this area. Part of that is we supplied ICE cleats to our employees prior to the winter training videos, but to be completely honest, the most substantial reason is favorable weather. So if you don't get ICE, you don't get ICE trips, slips, and falls. As far as customer injuries, we were 1% above where we ended last year. However, we had a downward positive trend. The spike was primary last year in January of 2016 was weather-related. And the main injuries were once again slip, trips, and falls. This next slide is going to be the contributing factor to customer injuries. It's a predominant driver of the customer injuries is, once again, non-preventable collisions. And I mentioned previously the actions were taken, i.e. the strobe lights, the deceleration lights. In addition to that, we're focusing on the way that we're curbing buses, because if you don't properly angle a bus into a bus stop, it leaves the potential for the rear to be sticking out and have a non-preventable collision. So we're focusing on that area as well. In addition to that, we're looking at hard braking issues, because that is driving injuries as well. And from that, we're extracting information from DriveCam, and we're using that information to coach the operators on how to perform better. And then you focus, when you have hard braking issues, on the following distance between each vehicle and areas of that nature. All right, in addition to that, we're also focusing on escalator-related injuries. For those of you who have recently been to Gallery Place, we've installed automated announcements. So as you go up the escalator, it gives you safety reminders. What I have my staff doing is identifying the top 5 to 10 areas where we're having the most escalator accidents, and then considering those for a pilot for automated announcements as well, just a way to raise customer awareness of the hazard.
Right. It might be 1.3%.
I think you're correct. So I'll have the slide corrected. Thank you. Okay, we're going to talk about Metro Access now. But first thing I'd like to point out is that Metro Access, we have a targeted goal of 3.0 accidents contractually that they're supposed to comply with. They came in below that number. However, we still had a significant increase in the accidents involving Metro Access. One of the things that I believe is driving this ratio spike is that my group sat with them last year from an SMS standpoint and looked at how they were capturing accidents. There were a number of incidents where an individual might have been transported to the hospital, was only observed and released. They didn't count that as an incident. From a reporting standpoint, it is reportable. So we went back, we looked at these incidents, and that drove the number of incidents much higher than they were originally reporting. So that's why I believe is partially responsible for the spike in the number of incidents that you see here. Regardless of the numbers, these are the actions that were taken to address it. An occupational therapist was brought on board. They're looking at the way that we transport passengers both to and from door-to-door service, how they're being secured in the bus. They're also going to be doing ride-alongs with the operators to physically see how we operate and come up with strategies to reduce injuries in this area. In addition, on the Metro Access side, they enhance the thresholds for the drive cam camera so that they'll get notified at a, you know, before you get to a hard stop, that threshold was set lower. So we could identify these events, use those as opportunities to coach the operators and identify the problems that we're having, you know, with the operator's performance. There's also a wheelchair script that was developed that's going to lead to a video on how to properly secure a patron in a wheelchair. In addition, Metro Access is also evaluating the use of deceleration lights, and they already have strobe lights on their buses as well. There's also, we formed a passenger assistance working group, so that'll also include an ergonomist to look at both the design of our fleet and see if we need to make any changes to the way that the fleet is actually configured. And I mentioned earlier that I believe the spike is partially attributed to, which I consider to be a positive, is that we're getting greater SMS compliance. And by getting that, we're getting better data, and from that we can surface these types of problems and address them more readily. On the positive side, we had the bus boarding and alighting was a 61% decrease. And I think that's part of our strategy to reduce these non-preventable collisions by having the buses berthed properly. If you berth properly in a bus stop, that reduced the people tripping when they're stepping off going onto the curb. In addition to that, the cord in by train doors is 62% decrease, and that we believe is to some degree because we have more supervision in the field doing things like efficiency testing, so therefore you're getting secondary effects like better platform observations. This is just to give you a recap of where we are with the open NTSB caps as well as FTA caps. I just want to highlight that from the NTSB side of the board, there's one cap that's highlighted in red as an unacceptable. That is the cap that has to do with roadway worker protection, which is R0809, which is the bidirectional communication between the train operator and the employee and vice versa. I just want to note we met with ProTran yesterday afternoon. They've installed the first boxes on a curve at Potomac Avenue. So we're going to come up with a test plan and start testing that. And I also want to thank the FTA once again for the $1.9 million grant that they gave us for roadway worker protection. Our strategy going forward is to start looking at the most hazardous locations in the systems, like blind curves, no clearance areas, installing these boxes at these fixed locations to give employees another layer of protection.
Before we leave that, what's the timing on this? What's your timing?
For
the work here.
I don't have a definitive time yet because we're still developing the scope. Mm-hmm. So once I have the scope fully developed, then we're going to have to see how we get the funding. Uh-huh. So I'll probably have a better picture at the next meeting.
Thank you.
Or I can brief you once I have that. I just want to point out that we're not, you know, one of the mechanisms we use to improve in performance is to have both external and internal safety audits. On the environmental side of the house, I believe the number that we had was 31 external audits. Of the 31 audits, there was not a single notice of violation, so I think we're performing well in that area. We also had the OIG evaluate our SMS program. They provided us with 3 recommendations. They've already closed one, and we submitted closure for 2 others. And in addition to that, we do internal audits. We've done 18 internal audits, and I believe the FTA has 16 FTA audits with an SMI audits grand total. In addition to that, the FTA did in-depth reports for the traction power electrification system, the vehicle securement investigation, stop signal overruns, and track integrity. We're using all four of these reports, the recommendations that came from them, to improve our performance in those areas. In addition to that, we requested that APTA come in and perform peer reviews in three key areas. Those were track inspections in the context of how the track inspectors perform work, third rail power infrastructure, and rail operations control center performance, and we're also reviewing all those recommendations. So I just want to touch on some of the key safety initiatives that were started in 2016. I think probably SafeTrack gave us the most benefit as far as improving state of good repair in a lot of areas of the system. I believe it touched on approximately, when it's complete, 31% of the system. In addition to that, as I mentioned earlier, some of the other key initiatives is the roadway worker safety protection initiative to address the NTSB recommendation. In addition to that, we're resurveying the system to ensure that we both identify all the hot spots and we have them correctly classified. In addition, one of the charges I had when I came in here was an FTA cap to evaluate the safety department itself. When I did the assessment of the reorganization of the safety department, I identified three key elements that needed bolstering. One was an accident investigation unit, one was a fire life safety unit, or an expanded fire life safety unit, and an increase in safety certification. I was given the heads to fill those, and I'm in the process of some of those jobs have been filled, and the other ones are in the process of being filled. As mentioned earlier, Metro Access has brought on an occupational therapist to try to reduce the number of accidents there, as well as a number of other initiatives that I discussed earlier. And in addition, the MTPD is partnering with bus transportation for Operation Safe Watch, which is what I mentioned earlier, where they go out to these high crime areas or areas where there's been a lot of assaults, and they have a greater presence in those areas to reduce bus operator injuries. The other one is we're looking at methods of red signal violations. That led to, I believe it was 10 locations with the highest frequency of red signal overruns. All of those locations have been retrofitted with LED signals. In addition, I met yesterday with Car Equipment to further discuss the car-borne solution, where you don't get this phenomenon of unintentional blindness, where a train operator moves and stops and proceeds and inadvertently runs red signals. So that's progressing as well. From a bus safety technology, as I discussed earlier, we're moving forward with pedestrian strobes and the deceleration lights. And in addition to that, we've recently received the approval to get rid of the 4K cars, which were the worst performing cars in the fleet. And the first car actually went off property last week. So unless anyone has a question, that concludes my briefing for today.
Thank you, Mr. Lavin, and thank you very much for the briefing. There's been a lot of progress, so congratulations on the progress. There's still some areas of concern, obviously. And the one that caught my eye when we talked last week was Metro Access. So I appreciate the extra information you provided on that. And I know you have this occupational therapist that is developing some curricula to further reduce our accidents. I know there's some questions, Mr. Boulder.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Thanks, Pat, for the excellent report. I didn't know that we were putting decelerating something or others on the back of our buses. What does it look like? Because I haven't seen it.
So typically when you step on a brake light, the light goes red. This gives you a flashing, so it more draws someone behind you, their attention to that light.
Okay.
It almost, if you picture some traffic lights now, have like a strobe that flashes.
Yeah.
It's similar to that.
Okay, second question. Years ago, we had a big discussion about the shields for our bus drivers.
Right.
A lot of controversy. I know the mayor had some concerns about it before she became mayor. Are we using the shields that were proposed like two or three years ago that looked like a cocoon pretty much? I mean, could you bring in an illustration of what these shields look like?
I can get you an illustration.
What do you think about them? Because it was yay or nay on this question.
Well, I can tell you I don't know the history here, but I can tell you my past experience with them.
Well, go ahead.
Any time, and we've used them in New York, and they were successful in New York. And I think when you see the employee assault rate drop at the rate it's dropping here, I'd say it's a success. And with that said, anytime you introduce a new technology, and it doesn't matter what the technology is, there's always going to be some form of resistance and some degree of a learning curve. So typically what you get when you introduce these shields is it creates, in some cases, a level of glare or a optical illusion on the bus. I think you have to, you know, educate the operators to expect this, and then once they adapt to it, then it becomes commonplace and they're able to operate. And I don't see any tremendous spike in incidents with buses with shields versus those without.
Could you bring in a picture the next time you're before the committee so we can see what the shields look like?
Yeah, I'll have it.
Thank you.
I'll have it sent to you.
Yes, Mr. Goldman.
No, that would come under, say, a different category, which I believe is undesirable. Right. And that is mitigated by bellying the 1K cars in the fleet. And hopefully by December of 2017, all the 1Ks and all the 4Ks will be out of the system.
So the undesirable is at least 16 by the end of the year.
Yes.
Of those 16 that are left, could you just identify what in your opinion are the three most important runs to resolve?
I'd have to go through them, but a lot of them have to do with issues like ventilation systems that don't have the capacity to remove smoke, and a lot of these are large capital investments. So that would be the categories I would be looking at, anything that has to do with fire life safety. I think that would be the key one that we would have to look at. I can go through the list and get you the list. Okay. 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 And I can give you the status of them and where we are. Okay.
Thank you. I looked at this report with interest, Mr. Lavin. One thing I find a little bit disturbing, though, is that we don't seem to be making progress in employee injuries or customer injuries, and I'm wondering if we're actually measuring the right things to determine safety on Washington Metro, because we have many unsafe acts that don't result in injuries. We have derailments. We have collisions, minor collisions in yards. We have red signal violations, things like that. We have trains that are offloaded in stations, and we have evacuations in tunnels. Do we track any of those, even though they don't result in injuries? Do we track those to try to get a flavor of how safety is improving on Metro?
The answer is yes, and that's reported out in the quarterly report to the FTA, specifically derailments and red signal violations. And we take those very seriously. In addition, on Friday, I have my staff meeting with the people who handle not only the maintenance of the work equipment, but the operation of it. Because when you do the analysis of the derailments, you had 11 derailments last year, and of those, two of them were involved Class 1 vehicles. One was in a yard. The other was the main line at East Falls Church. The other nine involved non-revenue vehicles that were either engaged in work or transport to and from. So if you want, I could add that matrix to this report going forward, but it is something that's on a high-level radar, and it's something that we report out publicly to the FTA, and it's something that we take very seriously.
Well, I think that that's important, because I think the public, and I get the question all the time, is safety getting better on Washington Metro? And I say, yeah, I think it is. But then when you provide this report that shows that we're going in the wrong directions on a bunch of stuff, there's a few success stories in there, but it's not really telling the whole picture. And basically, if you look at it, we're not meeting the goals. Employee and customer injuries are up, and yet I think we're making improvements in other areas. So I think that for these reports that come to the board, and it's entitled Annual 2016 Safety Report, I think that it's got to have some other data in here that basically shows what's going on, you know, because essentially the injuries, when you get to the injuries, if we go back to our SMS demonstration from the last meeting, the injuries are the part of the iceberg that's above the water. All the stuff that's going on below, you know, the close calls, and the programs that are directed at those issues, you know, they've disappeared from the report. And I think that's important. So I would ask that you take a look at this to see if there isn't a better way to, in a more accurate way, to measure safety performance, you know, on Washington Metro. If you're giving stuff to FTA, it probably should be in here also, and so that we can, you know, really take a look and see if we're making progress or not. Another question I have has to do with the goals that are set. I noticed we didn't make a couple of the goals. Where do those goals come from?
As far as for which, what specific are you asking?
There's 1.75 injuries per million passenger miles. There's 4.5 employee injuries per 100.
I can't give you the evolution of it. Those goals were established when I arrived in May. So I just kept the goals for the year. What I did do is we kept the customer injury rate the same. The employee injury rate we're modifying to make it more realistic for 2017. And that number is actually going to 5.1 from 4.9 for the employee injury rate.
Well, I think the goals are important. If we're going to have a goal and we're going to publicly say we met it or didn't meet it, I think the goals need to be useful and they probably need to be reviewed. We need to know where they're coming from.
Okay.
And I think that they need to also change. I mean, if you want continuous safety improvement, it needs to ramp down or ramp up depending on what the case may be to show how the organization is trying to get safer and safer every year. And I think that those goals, if we're going to measure against those goals and not just what we did last year, if you're going to measure against those goals, I think that some thought needs to be put in those and they need to be established where we can continue to show progress against that.
And could I just add to that, Bob?
Sure.
I think it probably would be beneficial to also show that where we are against the industry. Because when you talk about the employee injury rates, we may not have set our target, and our target may be too stringent, which is why I raised it. But we're still vastly below what the Bureau of Labor Statistics is for employee injuries. So I think when we do that, we may be unfairly beating ourselves up. But if you show it in the context of what the industry is versus how we're performing, it may give a broader picture of what we're actually doing here.
Yeah, I think that would be very wise to really give the full picture. And one more point, we have this graph here that shows 2015 versus 2016. And it shows, you know, a lot of variation. But we probably ought to be looking at longer-term trends. I think if you went back to 2010 or whatever and had like a 5-year or 10-year type trend, we could better see what's going on, because comparing year to year on passenger injuries, one accident can completely skew those numbers. And what we're looking at is a glide path where we get safer and safer every year. So this is a lot to dump on you right now, but I would appreciate if you would think about this and see if there isn't a better way to report progress on Washington Metro rather than just saying, you know, here's how many passenger injuries we have, here's how many employee injuries we have, because I think it goes a lot deeper than that. There's lots of incidents that go on that we're making improvements on that never result in an injury but do cause hazardous situations.
The only thing I'd like to respectfully disagree on is the 10-year trend analysis, because I think it's illustrated when we went to Metro Access that when we started actually reviewing the data from 2016, it was so underreported that ratio jumped enormously that I don't necessarily think there'd be a great value going back in 10 years if the data isn't there that's fully vetted and correct. So I think it might be something we look at going forward.
Well, maybe not, but if we did this again next year, if you had 2015, 2016, and 2017,
right,
then we would begin to be able to track that. We can compare it to what the industry's doing. We could compare it to what's happening here. And, you know, maybe provide some guidance on where we need to go.
I'm always looking to improve the report, so thank you.
Sure, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Corcoran.
Thank you. I'd also like to support your comments on seeing the progress that's being made. I appreciate it. The question, the deceleration lights on the back of the buses, you said it's been shown that that is improving the accident rates. You also said we'll implement those over a four-year time period. Why 4 years as compared to now? Is it budget? Is it availability?
It's probably a combination of if you're going to do 400 buses a year during preventive maintenance cycles, you can't do them all in the same year. You probably couldn't acquire, the vendor probably couldn't provide all that material in 1 year, and you kind of want to do it under a logical progression so you don't overwhelm the workforce and more other critical work like normal PMIs get pushed to the side.
Okay, so it's under a normal preventive care at interims or intervals of miles driven.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Porter.
Metro Access, and I very much appreciate the idea of bringing in occupational therapists to talk to operators about better ways they might handle these, in many cases, fairly fragile riders that they're getting on and off the Metro Access vehicles. I wonder how that impacts the action that we're considering to contract out some of these kinds of services to Uber and Lyft type entities. We've talked about, you know, driver training and how the drivers handle people as being a critical thing. Are the things that we're learning on Metro Access going to be transferred to requirements under these new kinds of services?
I would have to get back to you. I don't know what the contract language is, to be completely candid.
Well, I'm just putting in a vote for that happening. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Dorsey.
Thank you. I'd like to pick up on Mr. Lobby's line of comments. You know, we got the transit industry comparison with employee injuries. Do we have any similar data for customer injuries to get a sense of how we stack up with other transit properties there?
I could probably look at what's reported in NTD. So there is a mechanism to do that, and it would be based on similar numbers, i.e. how many per million passenger miles. So we can do that through NTD data. So if you'd like, I can ask my staff to look at that and see if we can benchmark us against other transit agencies.
I mean, I think that's always useful. You know, our targets are great, and it's good that we measure ourselves against targets, but to craft a wider narrative, I think we also need to put Metro in perspective, as Mr. Lobby detailed. The second question concerns something that, Bob, you also alluded to, the close call reporting system, and generally how, you know, rank and file employees play a role in, you know, offering up some of these suggestions or areas of work that you're scoping. Has that proved useful? Is that something that is generating the right kinds of ideas and attention to hotspot areas?
Yes and no. Okay, so I actually was looking at the close call reporting system. I'll give you an example where it was very valuable. There was a bus that was being used, and because of the configuration of the bus, there was a blind spot on the bus, and this was serviced. There was a very limited number of these access vans or this type of bus that was being used. So because of this, we went out, it was evaluated, and we just stopped using them. So that was very valuable. But one of the other problems I'm finding it is, and I discussed this briefly with Carol at the beginning of the meeting. We met with the FAA yesterday. So their process is a little different than ours, and I believe their process is probably a little better than ours. Because what they do is they have a committee, and that committee actually receives the complaint from the employee with limited information redacted. Okay, what we're getting is this goes to an independent third party, and they scrub the data, and then they send us the complaint. Sometimes they scrub so hard that we're losing the essence of what the complaint is, and then it can turn into we're looking for a needle in a haystack, trying to find out what the actual issue is, and then we have to go back and forth to get more information. So I'm actually contemplating, myself and Joe Leader, looking at the process, sitting with the union, and see if we can develop a different MOU where we're getting a similar model to, or more closely following what the FAA is doing. Mm.
Thanks. Useful to know.
Yes, Mr. Lobby.
Just a comment on that. FRA has a confidential close call reporting system that we developed that's based on the FAA system, we have it in place on most of the commuter railroads in the country. We do things a little bit differently than the C3RS program, confidential close call reporting system program here. And I have staff that would be happy to come over and explain what we do and the processes. And you can take it or leave it, or take the good ideas, leave the ones you don't like. But there are different ways to do this, and our program has been fairly successful. It's given us a lot of information, but we do use peer groups that actually look at the reports and make the suggestion. So it's not so distant from the organization.
And I just would like to also point out that there are other avenues for employees to surface safety complaints. We have a safety hotline, and we're also we're meeting with the union to try to work on our relationship to build more trust so that we can get some more reports directly from union members.
Are there other questions from the board? Seeing none, I'd like to remind us all that our next meeting is March the 13th. It's an odd date because it's designed to take advantage of somebody who's in town to give us a briefing on board member responsibilities in transit system safety. It's going to be given by Mr. Mulhouse from California. This briefing was developed after the Metrolinx accident several years ago. I think it would all be useful to us. Two board members have seen it already, Mr. Goldman and Mr. Dormjo, and they recommended it for the safety committee. In that case, may I have a motion to adjourn? Second? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Meeting's adjourned.